Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. They say San Francisco is a city built on secrets. Fog rolls in like a curtain, blanketing the hills, muffling the streets, and sometimes swallowing people whole. In February of 2013, 20-year-old Christian Hughes boarded a flight from San Diego to San Francisco. He told his mom he'd be back in a few days, just a quick visit with friends. Nothing out of the ordinary. But Christian never came home. No calls, no texts, no signs of life. He left his friend's apartment in the middle of the night and vanished. Over a decade later, his family is still waiting, still searching, still asking the same chilling question. What happened in those early morning hours? And why has no one come forward? Was it a choice, a cry for help, a moment of violence, or something much more sinister? Part of a disturbing pattern of young men disappearing from San Francisco without a trace. This is the story of Christian Hughes, a son, a friend, a bright light lost in the fog. Today, we're taking you into the heart of his disappearance, the facts, the fears, the theories, and the silence that's left behind. San Francisco in 2013 was a city caught in the balance between the old and the new, a place where fog curled through Victorian rooftops as tech empires blossomed in glass towers just blocks away. The world outside was changing fast. Pope Francis had just been elected. Edward Snowden was revealing the deep secrets of global surveillance, and the Boston Marathon bombing stunned a nation. But here, in the city by the bay, life moved at its own unpredictable rhythm, framed by the clang of cable cars, the scent of sourdough, and the endless echo of crashing waves along the Pacific. San Francisco was thriving. It had just been named one of the top U.S. cities to visit, and for good reason. Tourists from across the globe flocked to its shores for its iconic landmarks and bohemian charm. The Golden Gate Bridge, standing tall against the bay's misty blue, remained the city's crown jewel. Alcatraz Island tours sold out nearly every day. Fisherman's Wharf bustled with street performers, steaming crab pots, and souvenir shops. And Chinatown, the oldest in North America, buzzed with lantern-lit alleyways and dim sum eateries that hadn't changed in decades. This was a city made for wanderers, for dreamers, for people like Christian Hughes. Back then, a trip to San Francisco meant something. It was a pilgrimage to creativity, freedom, and self-discovery. You could lose yourself in the city's kaleidoscope of neighborhoods, the pastel-painted homes of the Haight, the edgy murals of the Mission District, the sweeping views from Twin Peaks. Whether you were a backpacker crashing in a friend's apartment or a couple splurging on a Bayview suite, the city welcomed you with open arms. Tourists filled neighborhoods, snapping selfies at the painted ladies of Alamo Square, the row of pastel Victorian homes immortalized by TV and postcards. They braved the steep climb up Lombard Street, the famously crooked block lined with perfectly manicured flower beds and red brick paving. They wandered through Golden Gate Park, a green sprawl bigger than New York's Central Park, with its hidden trails, Japanese tea garden, and glass-domed conservatory of flowers. There was a cable car ride from Powell Street to Fisherman's Wharf, a rickety, windy adventure that still felt like stepping back in time. Pier 39 was loud and full of life. Street performers, sea lions barking on the docks, and the smell of fried calamari drifting from every direction. Christian Hughes traveled from San Diego to San Francisco for just that kind of escape. He was vibrant, adventurous, and full of life, eager to explore the city's vibrant culture. But then, he vanished. Just days into his trip, in a city known for its light and wonder, Christian disappeared without a trace. Now, how does someone vanish in a city so full of people, cameras, tourists, and traffic? A city where the streets are alive late into the night and the sunrise glows gold across the bay. And how did his story get so easily lost in the backdrop of a city celebrated for its progress and prosperity? It's a haunting reminder that while San Francisco may be a city of possibility, it's also a city of mystery. The kind of place where shadows hide in plain sight, and where, sometimes, people disappear. People just like Christian Hughes. Before he became a missing person, before the headlines, the flyers, and the haunting unknowns, Christian Michael Hughes was just a young man figuring out his life like so many others his age. He was born on July 24th, 1992, and raised in San Diego, California. His mom, Kim, describes him as deeply social, one of those people who could walk into any room and strike up a conversation with just about anyone. He had a way of making people feel seen. He was funny, loyal, and warm, the kind of guy who would give you the shirt off his back if you needed it, a big heart, always on display. He graduated from San Diego High School, and at the time of his disappearance, he was working a regular job at Taco Bell. Not glamorous, but steady. Now, he had plans. Maybe not a concrete roadmap, but he was thinking about the future, talking about possibilities. Then, in 2013, Christian's world shifted. His father passed away, and the loss hit him hard. It was the kind of pain that lingers quietly beneath the surface, not always visible, but deeply felt. Now, like a lot of 20-year-olds, he was processing it in his own way, trying to stay strong, trying to move forward. So shortly after his father's death, Christian decided to take a trip, a few days in San Francisco. He told his mom he wanted to visit some friends, take a little break, maybe clear his head. It wasn't a major getaway, just a change of scenery, a familiar city with people he knew. But here's the thing that sticks with his mom. She didn't know who these friends were. She hadn't met them, didn't know their names or much about them. And she remembers having this gnawing feeling in her gut, a mother's intuition that something just didn't sit right. Still, Christian was 20. He was legally an adult. And like any parent, she knew she had to let go a little, even when it was hard. So she watched him go, trusting he'd come home safe. And now let's be real. Christian wasn't perfect. He was young. He liked to hang out, have fun. And sure, he partied here and there. But there were no signs of substance abuse, nothing out of control, just normal 20-something behavior. Figuring out boundaries, blowing off steam, trying to balance freedom with responsibility. He wasn't running from anything. He wasn't lost or spiraling. He was just living until he vanished. That trip to San Francisco was supposed to be a short one, just a few days. But Christian never came home. And in the days, weeks, and now years that follow, his family has been left with nothing but questions. Because the truth is, before someone disappears, they're a whole person with memories, dreams, quirks, and people who love them. Christian wasn't just a name on a poster or a case file. He was a son, a friend, a storyteller, and a dreamer. And his story deserves to be told. Not just how he vanished, but who he was before that day ever came. It all started like any ordinary goodbye. On February 4th, 2013, Christian Hughes' mother, Kim, drove him to the airport in San Diego. He had a short trip planned, a few days in San Francisco to visit friends. Nothing unusual, just a break, a change of scenery. Kim remembers thinking she'd see him again in 3 quick days. They said goodbye, nothing dramatic, just the casual send-off between a mother and son who assume they have plenty more goodbyes ahead. She watched him walk away, not knowing that it would be the last time she'd ever see him. Shortly after landing in San Francisco, Christian called his mom. He told her he'd arrived safely, sounded fine. Nothing in his voice raised concern. He said he'd be flying back on February 7th. They exchanged I love yous before hanging up. That was the last call they ever shared. The next day, February 5th, Christian met up with his Aunt Chelsea, who lived in the city. He asked her for a little cash. She gave him $70. He didn't explain what he needed it for. It wasn't a large amount of money, especially in San Francisco, and she figured it might just be for food or taxis. Nothing felt strange. On February 6th, he had lunch with a female friend. Again, no red flags. Just a young man making the rounds, seeing people he cared about. His return flight was booked for 3:30 p.m. on February 7th, and Kim was expecting him back in San Diego that afternoon. But when 3:30 rolled around and Christian still hadn't shown up, Kim checked his flight status. The plane had landed, but Christian wasn't on it. At first, she thought maybe he missed the flight. Delayed, overslept. She tried calling him. There was no answer. She tried again. Still nothing. She texted, waited, checked again. No reply. Kim felt the unease settle in her bones like any parent would. Her son had never gone completely silent like this. By the next morning, February 8th, panic started. Kim reached out to his Aunt Chelsea, hoping maybe Christian had stopped by again. But Chelsea told her no, the last time she saw him was on the 5th when she gave him the $70, and he seemed normal, calm, not worried, not running. So Kim tried calling the friends Christian had been staying with in San Francisco, but couldn't reach any of them. No one was picking up, no one was calling her back. And then, later that day, there was a knock at her door. It was the San Diego Police Department. They asked her a chilling question. Is your son home? Kim said no. He was supposed to be back by now. Why? And that's when the officer told her. Someone in San Francisco had called the police, one of the boys Christian had been staying with, asking if Christian had made it home safely. That was the moment Kim knew something was very wrong. And that's when the search began. Christian had been staying at a house in the 900 block of Capitol Avenue in San Francisco, along with several friends. They'd been having a small party that night, drinking, hanging out, just typical 20-something behavior. They told police that around 12:30 or 1 a.m. in the early hours of February 7th, Christian suddenly decided to leave. No explanation, no big goodbye. He just packed up his things and walked out. The last text message he ever sent was timestamped at 1:18 a.m. After that, radio silence. When his friends woke up around 10 a.m., he was gone. His bed untouched, his things missing. They said they assumed he had just left early to catch his flight. But here's the part that doesn't make sense. His flight wasn't until afternoon. He had a ride to the airport lined up. Why would he disappear into the night on foot with no car, very little money, and his phone soon turned off for good? And if his friends were truly worried about him, why did none of them call after he left? Not one of them texted. Not one checked in to ask if he made it to the airport. Not one called his aunt to see if maybe he'd shown up there. They didn't try to find him. Instead, they went straight to reporting him missing. While police initially opened a missing persons report, they didn't treat it like an emergency. Christian was 20 years old, after all. He was an adult. Maybe he'd taken off. Maybe he was just blowing off steam. But Kim didn't buy that. She knew her son. She knew he was still grieving the loss of his father, but he wasn't the type to just disappear. Her gut told her something was terribly wrong. Over time, she began to dig into the lives of the friends Christian had been staying with, and what she found was disturbing. Though police told her that none of the young men had criminal records, that wasn't exactly true. One of them had a serious history. A drug deal gone wrong that ended in a stabbing. another charge involving a robbery at a department store, where he allegedly threw a chair through a window. And yet, somehow, authorities dismissed her concerns. They told her there was no reason to believe foul play was involved. But how could they know that if they never investigated? Years passed. At one point, a new detective took over the case. He thought there might be more to the story. Maybe foul play had occurred. He brought in cadaver dogs and arranged to search the home where Christian had stayed. But by then, it was too late. The building had been demolished. Whatever secrets it might have held were now buried beneath the rubble. Then, in 2014, a possible sighting of Christian came in. Someone reported seeing a young man matching his description walking through San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury district with a blonde woman. He had longer, shaggier hair, but the same tattoos. So the sighting felt credible, but no one could track him down, and the lead went cold. To this day, no one knows where Christian Hughes is. His phone has never been turned back on. His bank accounts haven't been touched. His name hasn't shown up in any system, hospital, jail, shelter, nothing. All that remains is a trail of unanswered questions, a group of friends whose stories don't quite add up, and a mother who refuses to stop searching. Because when your child disappears, and you know them, truly know them, you don't just accept that they walked away. You fight, you scream, and you never stop asking, what happened to Christian Hughes that night in San Francisco? Christian's disappearance didn't happen in a vacuum. As his mother searched desperately for answers, knocking on doors, chasing tips, begging for police to dig deeper, she began to notice something chilling. Christian wasn't the only one missing. Because as you start to peel back the layers, a pattern begins to emerge. One that's haunting, almost too unsettling to ignore. In the years surrounding Christian's disappearance, a surprising number of young men, mostly in their 20s, mostly healthy, social, smart, have vanished under mysterious circumstances in and around San Francisco. We can't talk about Christian's disappearance without talking about the others. So let's take a look at the bigger picture. The statistics, the names, the similarities, and ask a difficult but necessary question. Is this just coincidence? Or is something more disturbing hiding in plain sight? Christian's story has become a thread in a much larger, unsettling tapestry. Amid the winding streets of San Francisco, between 2010 and 2013, five young men, intelligent, socially engaged, grounded, vanished without explanation. No connections between them, no shared social circles, just disappearances in daylight, phones turned off, bank cards untouched, and families left shattered. Whether these disappearances are connected or tragically coincidental is still an open question. But one thing is clear. Too many young men have vanished under strange and often baffling circumstances in San Francisco over the past decade. And the more light we can shine on their stories, the better chance we have of finding answers, or at the very least, keeping their names alive. Each of these men came from different backgrounds, different families, different circumstances. None of them knew each other, but they all had something in common. They vanished in San Francisco with little to no trace. Let's start with Sean Dickerson. Sean was 23 years old, a creative soul, a musician with plans for the future. He lived in the Mission District, a neighborhood known for its vibrant culture, activism, and bohemian spirit. In late 2011, Sean was preparing for a big move to New York with a friend. He had a job, he was saving money, and things seemed to be on track. But on the morning of December 2nd, 2011, Sean woke up late. He'd stayed up talking with his roommates the night before. So when he realized the time, he rushed out the door. It was around 11:30 a.m. Told his roommates he was late for work. He never made it there and never came home. No one has seen or heard from Sean since that day. His family describes him as gentle and kind, not someone who would simply run off without a word. His social media accounts went silent, his bank card untouched. No phone calls, no sightings. Gone, just like that. The details only deepen the mystery. That day, Sean was seen leaving on foot. No car, no plan, no known issues with mental health or addiction. He was wearing a light gray hoodie, black dress shirt, pants, and brown shoes. His family believes someone must know what happened. But over a decade later, they're still waiting for answers. Then there's Cameron Remmer, who disappeared just 2 months earlier in October 2011. Cameron was 29 and in town for a business trip. He checked into the Fairmont Hotel, an upscale location near Nob Hill. But on October 6th, he checked out and was never seen again. Cameron struggled with bipolar disorder, and his family feared he might have had an episode. He hadn't used his phone, email, or bank account since that day. The last known sighting of Cameron was near the hotel. Some reports say he was acting erratically, possibly confused. He was known for wearing mismatched shoes, sunglasses, and casual clothing, and could be disoriented without his medication. His family, like so many others, believes he may have ended up living unhoused, possibly confused or unable to reach out for help. They've searched shelters, walked city blocks handing out flyers, and followed up on every possible lead, but none have led to Cameron. Next is Sean City, a name that's become well-known in missing persons circles, not just because he vanished, but because his case carries a particularly urgent warning. Sean was 19 years old when he went missing on May 21st, 2013. Months before, he had suffered a traumatic brain injury after a fall. He had undergone cranial surgery, had titanium screws in his skull and wrist, and was considered medically fragile. Without his medication and follow-up care, Sean's condition could quickly deteriorate. That day, Sean had visited a former teacher at the French American International High School on Oak Street. He was in good spirits, nothing seemed unusual. But after leaving the school on foot, he disappeared. Sean's family believes he was in medical distress. They explained to the media that Sean could easily have become confused, lost, or even unconscious. His right eye had a slight droop from the injury, and he wore braces on his teeth. He had a distinctive scar from his forehead to the back of his head, hidden beneath his hair. Despite a massive public search effort, media attention, and even a $5,000 reward, no trace of Sean has ever been found. Then there's Jackson Miller, who vanished under entirely different circumstances. Yet, his case only adds to the mystery. Jackson was 19 years old when he left home on May 15, 2010. He had been open with his parents about his mental health struggles, depression, anxiety, and feeling overwhelmed. He had recently reduced his medications, hoping to find some balance, but his family noticed he seemed more withdrawn and hopeless in the days before he left. That day, Jackson drove his car to the Golden Gate Bridge. He left his belongings inside, wallet, phone, everything, but no suicide note and no keys. Authorities reviewed the bridge footage. No one matching Jackson's description was seen jumping. And in the days after, there were credible sightings of him in San Francisco, just blocks from where he parked his car. Then, someone believed they saw him at a Target store in Woodland Hills, California in March 2021, more than a decade after his disappearance. A young man with a similar description told a woman he was a missing person named Jackson, and it was all caught on security footage. Still, nothing was definitive. Five young men vanished. Different years, different stories, different lives, yet eerily similar in one key way, San Francisco. Each of these cases remains unsolved. Families are still searching, still hoping. And detectives have never officially confirmed a connection between them, but they haven't ruled it out either. Is it just a coincidence? Is something more sinister happening beneath the surface? Or has the city simply become a place where vulnerable young men can fall through the cracks? Maybe someone knows something. Maybe you do. Because cases like these are never really cold. They're just waiting for the right person to come forward. Mm-hmm. Now that we've traced the final hours of Christian's disappearance and talked about the San Francisco Five, it's time to step into the realm of what if, where uncertainty breeds possibility and possibilities remind us how little we truly know. One theory whispers of Christian's choosing to vanish on purpose, to erase the pain, reset his world, and begin again, somewhere far from San Diego, far from the loss of his father. At just 20 years old, he was an adult, grieving the death of his father and seeking space to heal. Maybe the sudden departure at 1 a.m. wasn't fear or foul play, but the start of a fresh chapter. His belongings missing, phone turned off, and the Haight-Ashbury sighting in 2014, could these be breadcrumbs of a deliberate escape? Possibly. But consider this. Christian rarely went a single day without calling his mom. And the man seen in San Francisco with long hair and a blonde woman, possibly with the same tattoos? There was no confirmation. Trying to believe this was a fresh start feels like clinging to hope in a vacuum. In the wake of his father's death, Christian had endured emotional tolls. His mother recalls him suffering quietly, vulnerable, fragile, in need of support. Could he have wandered off because the grief became too much? He missed his flight home, wandered off at night with no plan, disconnected from his phone. The perfect storm of confusion. If he turned to drugs or alcohol or was slipping into depression, it might explain that midnight exit. But there's no record of mental illness or substance abuse. And nothing in his history suggests he'd abandon everything so abruptly. So this is where things grow dark. The young men Christian stayed with, the ones who said he packed and left quietly, were not as innocuous as police first assumed. Though investigators initially found no indication of foul play, Christian's mom persisted, believing deeply that the timeline did not align. Online investigations, court records, and tip ledgers later unveiled worrying truths. That one friend, with a criminal history of drug-related violence, attempted murder, weapons, vandalism. Still, law enforcement said none of them were persons of interest, at least not publicly. Another theory, perhaps it had nothing to do with who he was staying with. It could have been predatory violence, someone unknown, someone outside his circle. San Francisco is a city with hidden shadows. A late night stroll, a random attack, no witnesses, and Christian disappears. There's no sign he sought danger, no nightlife adventure or risky meetup. Just a silent departure in the early hours. A moment where a predator could strike and then vanish into the city's network. It's a chilling possibility. And then there's the unnerving throughline. Christian's disappearance is part of the wave of missing young men in San Francisco between 2010 and 2013. The California Five. Jackson Miller, Sean Dickerson, Cameron Remmer, Sean Seedy. All vanishing under strange circumstances. No official link has been proven. But some detectives quietly admit these cases shared deeper resonance. Similar ages, sanctioned disappearances, fragile emotional or mental states, late-night vanishings. Could there be a blurred connection? A roaming predator, a pattern of opportunity, a collective vulnerability that stitched these stories together? We don't know. But each time we raise Christian's name, we touch that possibility. Every theory has possibility. But also painful gaps. Christian's mom, Kim, still fights. She's faced closed doors, unseen evidence, and a haunting question. What if someone knows? Theories won't find Christian, but they keep the questions alive. Did he go on purpose? Did someone betray him? Was he taken by someone? Was this part of a larger network affecting young men in the city? Unfortunately, we don't have those answers, just the determination to ask the questions. San Francisco is one of America's most iconic cities, a place of beauty, culture, and possibility. But as the story of Christian Hughes reminds us, it's also a city that can swallow someone whole in the blink of a moment. So if you're planning a trip, From backpackers to honeymooners, it's worth knowing how to stay safe, appreciate the charm, and avoid becoming part of a darker statistic. You need to know the neighborhoods. San Francisco isn't uniform. It's a patchwork of experiences. As of 2025, most tourist areas, Fisherman's Wharf, Pier 39, Nob Hill, Union Square, Chinatown, they're all still generally safe day and night. You'll find cameras, police foot patrols, and well-lit blocks. But darker pockets, like the Tenderloin, parts of the Mission District, and SoMa, are best avoided, especially after dark. Keep your route in mind, plan ahead, and trust your instincts. If a street feels off, turn back. Crime in San Francisco is real, but mostly nonviolent. Think pickpockets, purse snatchers, and car break-ins. So you need to be street smart. Keep your phone down and your eyes up. Stay alert. Carry valuables in inside front pockets or secure bags held closely to your body. Never leave purses or luggage unattended, especially on the backs of chairs. Use taxis, Uber, Lyft, rideshare services after dark instead of walking alone. Plan your route, know where help is or hotel lobby, and stick to busier streets. Car break-ins are a notorious issue, though statistics show that as of 2024, they've dropped by over 50%, thanks largely to new technology and enforcement measures. But this doesn't mean you can get complacent. Never leave anything visible in your parked car, not even a jacket or small item. Lock your car at all times and choose secure, well-lit parking areas. San Francisco is home to a vibrant and large homeless population. Some are vulnerable, others struggle with addiction or mental illness. Most are harmless, but some aren't. Be respectful, but cautious. Never approach unknown people in encampments or alleyways. Support local charities rather than giving money directly. Some panhandlers may be part of opportunistic behavior. Be alert in crowded or poorly lit areas and avoid parks and back streets at night. San Francisco isn't shy about public safety. In 2025, Mayor Lurie introduced a hospitality zone task force, a 24/7 police presence around Union Square, Moscone Center, and major hotel corridors. Community ambassadors patrol SoMa and the Mission to discourage open-air drug use and encampments. The city's Vision Zero program, initiated in 2014, has added traffic cameras and pedestrian safety measures to reduce accidents. And there are apps like Citizen and Alert SF that update for real-time alerts on closures, events, crimes, or public safety advisories. Just keep in mind, these programs only do so much. You must always stay aware and advocate for your own safety. And remember, tourists stand out, so try to dress casually and avoid flashy jewelry. Carry only what you need, leave excess cash or passports in your hotel safe. Separate your cash, cards, and ID in case of loss or theft. Keep a small safety whistle or alarm, just in case. Christian's disappearance in 2013 is a heartbreaking reminder. Regardless of whether you're a traveler, a local, a friend, situational awareness matters. He left a friend's apartment at 1 a.m. with no communication, no ride, and no return. His phone went dead. His route vanished. Had he taken a lift, updated someone, or stayed inside? Even one of these steps could have changed everything. San Francisco remains one of the world's greatest tourism hubs. Ride the cable cars, stroll Lombard Street, and hike the Golden Gate Bridge trails. Visit the Exploratorium, the California Academy of Sciences, or Alcatraz. Explore the Mission murals, sip coffee in North Beach, or watch the sunset from Twin Peaks or Marina Green. Eat clam chowder at Pier 39, sample dim sum in Chinatown, and wander the galleries of Union Square. With common sense precautions, San Francisco can be magical, nostalgic, cinematic, and electric. Travel safely, stay alert, respect the city, and it will treat you well. But always remember Christian Hughes, a young man whose voice fell silent in a city of echoes. Take his story not just as a mystery, but as a lesson. prepare, protect, and connect when you're away from home. Christian Hughes was only 20 years old when he vanished without a trace from the streets of San Francisco. He's more than a name on a flyer, more than a case number, more than a mystery. Christian is a son, a friend, a boy with big dreams and a bigger heart, someone who lit up a room with his laugh, someone who wasn't afraid to show his style or wear his heart on his sleeve, or, in his case, tattoo it over his heart. When he was last seen, Christian was 5 feet 8 inches and around 140 pounds. He had brown hair and hazel eyes. A long scar traces the length of his spine, a reminder of a surgery he underwent. On his left arm, the words West Coast are inked into his skin. On his right, the word loyalty. A playing card tattoo decorates his wrist, and over his heart, the image of praying hands, a symbol of faith and strength, permanently etched onto his chest. He's also known to wear his hair in different styles and has stretched earlobes. Distinctive, expressive, uniquely Christian. To those who love him, he's Chris or Diego. He's the boy with the cheeky grin, a soft spot for his family. The one who would always tell you he loved you before hanging up the phone. The kid who never got the chance to come home after a quick trip to visit friends. It's been over a decade since Christian disappeared. A decade of unanswered questions, a decade of birthdays missed, a decade of silence where there should be laughter and life. But it's not too late. Someone knows something. And even the smallest piece of information, the tiniest detail, could help bring Christian home. If you've seen someone who matches Christian's description, if you were in San Francisco in February of 2013 and remember something, anything, about a young man traveling from San Diego, please come forward. You can contact the San Diego Police Department at 619-531-2000. You might be the person who helps end a family's nightmare. You might be the one who brings the light back into their lives. Because Christian Hughes is not forgotten. Not by his family, not by his friends, and not by us. Someone out there knows where he is. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod and subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/The Last Trip Podcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.